Right here and right now, I have two friends, one old and one new, Tom Fielding and Aaron Humble. And Aaron Humble is a tenor and is presenting a solo recital tonight at the Cathedral of St. Augustine as part of the Sacred Music at the Cathedral series. So nice of you to brave the weather. And
absolutely. My pleasure.
So the show is on?
At this point, yeah. In the 5 years we've been doing concerts at the Cathedral, I've never canceled one yet. Obviously, we encourage people to use their good judgment, but if we perform for five people, that'll be five people who will have the enrichment of an evening of sacred art songs.
That's the plan, isn't it?
Indeed.
Yes, that's the plan at this point.
Yeah, but so the cathedral holds many more.
Yes, 648, so it'll be nice and resonant, and we won't lose reverberation because of so many people in the audience.
Right, right. There's a lot of people now that live right downtown. You don't have to, you know, draw from far and wide. You can get a nice little crowd together just...
That's right. That's right.
Mile circumference. So the concert starts at
7 p.m. in the St. Augustine Cathedral Church. Aaron selected a very diverse program, some art songs by Eric Thiemann, which are very English romantic, sort of coming out of the English cathedral tradition of Howells. A set of pioneer songs by David Ashley White, which are fun settings. Aaron?
The Dvorak biblical songs, the first five, which we're doing with organ, because they're so orchestrally conceived. It's really nice to hear the different colors of the instrument, bringing sort of all of Dvorak's ideas out in that. Some H.T. Burley. A lot of people don't know that H.T. Burley studied with Dvorak when Dvorak was teaching at the National Conservatory of the United States of America, which doesn't exist anymore, in New York City, mm-hmm. And then a couple of Mendelssohn pieces, including a duet that I'll be doing with Karen Kness, who's on faculty here at Western.
And yes, Günter Lauchmann will be the pianist for the second half of the program, and don't forget the Onager.
Oh, Onager. The Three Psalms, yes.
The composer, Arthur Onager.
Lovely, yes.
All right. Well, as interested as I am in hearing more about these pieces that are totally unfamiliar to me, biblical songs by Dvorak, what?
Yeah.
I really want to back up a little bit. I'm excited to hear about your career, Aaron, as a soloist and with some pretty famous ensembles. But even before that, I understand that you and Tom made your connection way back in school days.
That's right. We met at Indiana University, I guess probably in 2000. So we're coming on 18 years ago.
Right.
I arrived in 2000. And we've managed to keep in touch over the years as we've both moved around the country.
and Aaron has, as you and I have talked about many times, Kara, Oregon is this very, very small world where everyone seems to know everything about everyone else. And I've had a number of colleagues that Aaron has sung for as a professional cantor. That's also the grad school connection, the IU connection, is Karen's participation tonight. She was a grad student at IU and Voice also at the same time. So it's a nice little sort of reunion for us to get together and make some music together.
And voice was your passion then?
It was. Yeah. I mean, I've always sort of had a foot in choral conducting as well. And at some point, I keep thinking I'm going to have to make a choice in that regard. But so far, I'm able to sort of straddle that line and keep proceeding down the hill.
How did you find your way to classical singing?
I went to Millikan University in Illinois, which is a small liberal arts school, and it has a pretty big music program, something like 300 majors or something. And I went there because of a recommendation, probably shouldn't say this on the radio, but from a show choir choreographer, because I was in two show choirs in high school. And Millikan has this great musical theater program, and they have commercial music, and I went just as a music ed major, but then on a whim decided to audition for the opera. And I was cast as a freshman, and I really enjoyed it. And the more I started singing repertoire from different operas and getting further and further sort of ensconced in the art song tradition, I knew that that was for me. It also didn't take long for me to realize that the music education classroom was probably not for me as well. So I switched to performance, and then my teacher pointed me towards Indiana with a specific teacher there for grad school.
And I'll note, of course, that his comments about show choir was with due respect to Gold Company.
We all love each other. I'm sure there's
certainly.
That's right. And actually, the director of Gold Company, Greg Jaspers, was at Millikan working with the vocal jazz ensemble when I was a student there.
Far out.
Small world.
That is amazing.
Indeed. Is amazing.
They just had their 40th anniversary spectacular last weekend. It was really great. And it's interesting, part of your story, it's interesting that at one point in your life, somebody else knew more about your voice than you did.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I remember the day that I went into my voice lesson with the intent to ask my teacher, do you think that maybe I could be a performance major? Because I had been doing a lot of singing, and it sure was more meaningful to me at the time than the observations I was doing in the classroom. And I was a little afraid that she would say, "Oh, maybe you should stick to music ed." But she didn't. And actually, before I even asked the question, she turned to me and said, "Why aren't you a performance major, Aaron?" Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Oh, that was easy."
What a relief. Yeah. So what were your options upon finishing, you know, training and school? And
well, when I was at Indiana, like a lot of my friends, I was finishing up a doctorate and I was looking at faculty positions, you know, and they were moving to, you know, many of them to rural areas and perhaps places that I wasn't really excited about living in. And I was really young. I was like 26 years old. I really did not feel like I was ready to be in an academic position. And I saw a job posting for Contus. And I was like, what's this? A full-time job as a singer, salary, benefits. I wasn't going to be getting rich, but at least you weren't always hustling for your next gig. And right. So I auditioned.
The thought must have crossed your mind that, well, if I want this, there must be hundreds of people.
Right, yeah.
Or maybe thousands.
So I auditioned, and they offered me a job, and I ended up being there for 10 years.
So as a member of Contus, you were with the group for a decade.
Yes.
You found it relatively easy to get in, which that's amazing, too. You must have a very special gift.
Well, it's a very specific skill set that group looks for, and by the time you get through, you know, the right kind of voice, the right kind of musicianship skills, the interest in working in a collaborative work environment. That's a big one for musicians. You know, you get down to a pretty small group of people. And when I was on the other side doing the hiring, it was amazing to me how we would always find the right one person. Like it was always, with few exceptions, but then the next year we would find the right person. But you know, it's actually one of the first people that was hired that came from outside of the Minnesota choral bubble was a Western Michigan grad.
Who was that?
His name is Brad Kramer Urbis. And he's still doing some singing in the Twin Cities. But Contus had started as a student group at St. Olaf. And so, you know, they have their very specific tradition there. And so it took a while for people to open up beyond that tradition. So I got to them right when they were starting to hire more people that had more professional experience and was really with that company from sort of a grassroots, hey guys, let's do this, to what feels like a real early maturity of an arts organization when I left.
Interesting. My guest is Aaron Humble, who performs tonight at 7 p.m. at St. Augustine Cathedral. Gunta Laukmana will be the piano collaborator for most of the concert, or at least half.
About half.
Yeah. Tom Fielding will also be collaborating as an organist, and Karen Kness will make an appearance.
Yes.
Music starts at 7, as I mentioned. It's a free concert open to the public. A free will offering is accepted.
Free will offering of any amount, obviously. prospect of a compact group tonight gives me some budget worries. So if you thought about accompanying but are not able to make it out, we certainly will be happy to accept anything in the mail you'd like to give us.
Well, it's too bad we can't have the concert here on the radio.
Right.
You know, and open up the pledge lines or something. But the show must go on.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Is this concert... For you, Aaron, are you prepping for a big recital in another town or another city that's coming up? That are you performing as a soloist a lot right now?
I kind of split my time between singing, conducting myself, and then singing in professional choirs as well. So I'm actually going to do most of this repertoire again in Minnesota. In Mankato, where I teach at Minnesota State University in Mankato, with a local organist there, and try to get off campus and into the community a little bit more. And my next big thing that's coming up will be West Side Story with the Mankato Symphony. I've never sung Tony. I'm 40 now, so luckily I'll be far enough away from the audience that maybe they can believe that I'm a young man in New York City.
No, you will pull it off, I trust. Oh, that's fantastic. What a role. I mean...
Yeah, and, you know, with the Bernstein birthday, you know, there's a lot of Bernstein happening.
Yeah. I should probably mention our friend Ann Harrigan is conducting the Battle Creek Symphony Orchestra in West Side Story next month. So
excellent.
If you can't make it to Minnesota,
yes.
Battle Creek has a production right. coming up. That's exciting. It is what I kind of pictured, sort of a whole series of concurrent projects mm-hmm. happening at once. A lot of prep work. And it is nice to get out of town, it sounds like, for you.
It is, yes. Mm-hmm. And it keeps me working and relevant to my students as well, who are, you know, just trying to start this process themselves.
Well, I am going to attempt to stream a selection of you singing from aaronhumble.com, which is your website.
That's right.
And there's a list to choose from. Would it be all right if I picked music of Samuel Barber to listen
Absolutely.
To?
Absolutely.
Okay. Can you tell me a little about what this music represents? Or?
Sure. I believe the selections that are on there are the three songs, so not some of his most popular work, but three really terrific poems. The first, Now I Have Fed and Eaten Up the Rose, really beautiful, sort of haunting love poetry. The second piece is The Green Lowland of Pianos, which is kind of funny and goofy, this sort of, you know, making a concert situation into, you know, sort of anthropomorphizing it, or however you say that word. I can never get it quite right. one thing I love is the way that he talks about the ushers and the audience members. And, you know, having spent enough time on a concert stage, it really does sort of paint that picture from the perspective of the performer.
Yeah.
And then the last piece is Oh, Boundless, Boundless Evening. We probably won't listen to all three because that's kind of a lot of Barber maybe, but that's a really lovely piece that where he is sort of clever by using a lot of augmented harmony, which, you know, two major thirds stacked on top of each other, which does make the piece sort of boundless.
Nice. Aaron Humble performing tonight at 7 p.m. in St. Augustine Cathedral. three songs of Samuel Barber. Certainly one of my favorites. I really enjoyed hearing that, Aaron Humble. You were singing in that performance, clearly a live performance.
Yes, indeed.
Was that a recording you remember?
I do, actually. Another IU connection. That was Michael Bennett on the piano from a recital at St. John's in Lafayette, Indiana.
My guest is Aaron Humble, along with Tom Fielding, who oversees the Sacred Music at the Cathedral series and will be performing as well tonight. I still have to get the story on Biblical Songs by Antonin Dvorak. This is where you two will be collaborating, correct?
That's correct, yes. Actually, the Timon, the David Ashley White, and then the Dvorak are all with organ, so that whole first half of the program. So Dvorak was a deeply spiritual person. In the town where he had his home, which he called Via Rzalka, there was a church that he commissioned an organ for, and he often played weekend masses himself. He was very devoted to the church and to the liturgy of the church, and these 10 biblical songs are all settings of biblical passages in Czech.
In Czech.
They're published in German and in English, but the rhythms are even different with the Czech. So I really feel like you're doing it a disservice if you don't do it in the original language. And Dvorak was so proud of his homeland. Like, he was so Czech. So he set these 10 songs, and most people only do the first five. They make a nice set, and otherwise it makes for a long set of Dvorak. They're definitely symphonically conceived in terms of the gestures, and there are these like tremolos that happen in the pedal on the organ, or at the bottom of the piano if you're doing it with the piano, and you can just hear the string basses and the celli. I can hear the colors of the orchestra in it. So I'm so excited to be doing it with organ, because it really brings these pieces to life. So I mentioned how Czech Dvorak was. He did not want to leave his homeland to come to the United States to teach here. But
they kept
offering him more money.
Yeah.
And the folklore is that when the final offer came in, that his wife actually returned the contract. Said, yes, you are doing this.
He was still waffling.
Yeah. So he came over here and to New York and was teaching. And after his first year there, he was so incredibly homesick that he got on the train and he went out to Spillville, Iowa, where there was a Czech community, St. Wenceslaus Parish, which is still in Spillville, Iowa. And he lived the entire summer there speaking Czech, probably eating pierogies, and playing Mass at St. Wenceslaus. He also traveled up to Minnesota to New Prague, pardon the pronunciation, which is a town that's still there where there's a Czech Historical Society, and up to the Twin Cities as well, where he visited Minnehaha Falls and some of the other attractions, and is said to have written the theme for his E-flat symphony at Minnehaha Falls.
You mentioned William T. Burley. Would he have studied with Dvorak back in New York?
Yeah, Burley studied with Dvorak at the American Conservatory. Now, and this is early 20th century, late 19th century, when all of this was transpiring. And one of Dvorak's absolute insistences was that anybody could be accepted to this conservatory, no matter what their religion or race was. This is progressive stuff, mm-hmm. right? So there were Jewish students, there were Black students. And, I don't think that's what perhaps polite society of New York City had in mind when they wanted to create this conservatory, but he wouldn't do it if they didn't agree to that. And it's so fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. And so...
Well, and the fact that we are still talking about what he said 120 years ago
yes.
is still today so relevant. Yeah.
And Burley is credited with introducing Dvorak to African-American spirituals, which, of course, play a big role in the Symphony from the New World. And Dvorak was also introduced to some Native American culture when he was in Iowa. And through all of that, you know, that's how he deduced that the American sound of music should include the music of Native Americans and African Americans, which was very, very controversial. And there was a lot of pushback from classical music and from composers on the East Coast at the time. The Gaelic Symphony by Amy Beach, a composer I love, but she wrote that in response, you know, to the songs from the New World, Symphony from the New World.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was sort of this devout Eastern European Catholic man, but he had this theme of social justice, which of course is an important part of the Catholic Church to this day. But it's really fascinating to me, you know, and really his love of his spirituality is really evident in how colorful he paints this text.
I'm curious about, as a performer, the contrast between piano accompaniment and organ accompaniment must be extreme at times. Must be two totally different kinds of things for you.
You know, it really is, because even though the piano has quite a dynamic range, the way that you sing with the piano, there's always sort of a certain threshold of support.
And a decay, a quick decay on a lot of the sound.
Yeah, but with the organ, you know, even when it's like a flute stop, you know, sometimes depending on where in the room that pipe is sounding, it can feel a little exposed, you know. And then at the other end of the spectrum, of course, when Tom really gets things going, you know, it's glorious to sing, you know, then in front of so much sound and color. And we did spend some time checking balances and all of that to make sure.
Yeah, and the Tiemann pieces and the Dvorak really give me an opportunity to use quite a dynamic spectrum of the instrument, because both are really really have symphonic an underlying symphonic conception. The Tiemann pieces are originally for organ; they're not transcriptions. But again, the early 20th century aesthetic, especially in English organ music, is one of is a symphonic aesthetic. And so there's a lot of changing of stops. There's a lot of crescendo and decrescendo, using the stops and the expression boxes and so forth. And so it's really a lot of fun to sort of paint a picture in sound with Aaron.
And you can also lean over and say, just give it all you got, Aaron. I,
well, know. There are a couple spots where the accompaniment is marked fortissimo and Aaron is singing in a very low register, which is very hard for a tenor to project with. And so the balance does get just a little lopsided, but we've sort of just determined that that's really inherent in the writing and there's not a lot we can do about it. But no, I try to be careful to make sure to remind myself that Aaron is the soloist.
It is lopsided, just not the way you normally think. Well, it's been a pleasure, gentlemen, to preview this concert. Tom, tell us when and where once
All
again.
All right. Tonight, 7 p.m. in the St. Augustine Cathedral Church. That's Aaron Humble is the soloist, accompanied by myself on the organ, Gunter Lagmann on the piano, and then the final duet from the Mendelssohn-Lobgesang with Karen Kness, faculty here at Western. So we hope that maybe we'll get a little break from the snow and people can find their way out, but the show will go on.
That's right.
Well, thank you, Aaron, and thank you, Tom. And we'll be wrapping up now because the Detroit Symphony Orchestra broadcast starts in less than 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.